All right, so today we're going to talk about friendship. My particular subject, iron sharpens iron. You're going to be very familiar with that. It comes from Proverbs 27. It's a fairly straightforward idea. I'm going to be mindful of the fact that I think yesterday y'all talked about relationships, like dating and marriage, and hopefully one of the things that came out of the lesson was it's very important that you pick who you're going to have those relationships with. So the same principle applies. We're not really splitting the atom here. The principles that you talked about yesterday are the same ones today. The quality of people with which you surround yourself are going to affect you either for the better or for the worse. Simple enough, right? Everybody gets that? We're all rocket scientists in here. We all can handle that particular theory, right? Okay. I want to talk to you today about the kinds of friends that we have as far as the very, very close ones. Now, if you're like me, you have a phone and it has a favorites tab. And it's got the people on there that I call the most, the people who are important to me, the ones. I got lots of numbers in my phone, but there's only about 10 of them on my favorites tab. Life is like that. We have to recognize there are people that, as we interact with them, you're going to like them, you're going to be friendly with them, you're going to talk to them from a time and occasion, but there's just, when we're talking about the type of friend we're talking about today, there's a different level, right? You share more with them, you talk more with them, you spend more time with them, they know more about you. They know things about you that other people don't know. Those are the kinds of friends that we're looking for as Christians. You know, one of the worst things on Facebook is the idea of a friend being someone who just maybe you share an interest with or you talk to them one time and you click on a thing and it says, hey, you're now friends. You're not. You're acquaintances. Friends, as we look at it in the Bible, is much deeper than that. The idea that iron sharpens iron is important. Now, most of the time when we talk about a friend, someone who's close to you, someone who's in your favorites list, so to speak, they're there for a reason. You have a shared interest. Maybe you're related to them. Maybe it's something that's required for your job or whatever. But you need to talk to them. When we talk about who sharpens us, we need to recognize that, you know, there are all kinds of things that we could talk about as friends. But we need to find those friends that ask the right kinds of questions. So, let me give you an example. I have a preacher friend back home. He comes by the office every now and then. I go by his office every now and then. And we sit and talk. We talk about normal things that you think friends would talk about, right? We talk about Marvel movies and football and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we do talk about that. But he asks other kinds of questions. Questions like, hey man, how's your walk with Jesus going? Questions like, how are your daily devotions going? Or, you know, things like that. Things that remind us of what's most important. How are things going at home? You know, how are things going here with the work? Those are questions that need to be asked, because as much as I like to talk about Marvel movies and football, those are the real things of substance that are important in this life. And I need a friend who's willing and able to ask those questions. To have someone like that is a blessing. And we have to recognize that God gave us the church so that we could find those people. The church is filled with those kinds of people. People of that quality, of that nature, who think about those kinds of things. We need people in our lives who ask the tough questions, who ask about our home life, who ask about, you know, things like how close are you getting to the edge in any particular thing. Is there something you're really struggling with? Is there something that's really a burden to you? Is there something that's making it harder for you to focus on God? Those are the kinds of questions we have to look for in a friend. And when we start asking those questions and we start having those conversations, then we get into the realm of iron sharpening iron. The other stuff is just fluff. It's not going to sharpen anything. All it's going to do is take up time. It may entertain you for a moment, but it's not going to make you a better Christian. And so we're going to talk about friends today. We're going to talk about why they're important. We're going to talk about the quality of friends and how we find them, what we look for in a friend. But when we use that word friend, I've said all of this to make this point. We're talking about a deeper relationship than a mere acquaintance. Okay? It's more than just someone that you occasionally talk to or that you bump into or that you may even be somewhat familiar with, but you don't have these kinds of conversations with them. Okay? Those are the important conversations. That tells you what kind of relationship you have. We need people who are going to encourage us when we are discouraged. All of us at some point in our life, you deal with people, you deal with life, you deal with the situation, you're going to get discouraged. It's a normal thing. Everyone does it. That's why the Bible talks about encouraging one another so much. We need those people in life that will encourage us when we are discouraged, who can recognize, hey, something's off. Going back to the relationship that y'all talked about yesterday, my wife and I can talk to one another, and there are times she says the right things, and I can just see it on her face. I can hear it in her voice. I know you're trying to tell me what you think I want to hear. I know you're trying to put on a brave face, but I can tell something's not right. And she can do the same thing to me. So those are the kinds of friends we want. Ones who can sit and talk to us, and no matter what comes out of our mouth, can recognize, hey, something's going on. There's something we need to talk about. There's something that needs to be addressed because I can just tell something's off. I can tell you're discouraged. I can tell you're frustrated. I can tell you're angry. All right, so we're going to ask the question today, who are my friends? I think in all of our lives, we need three types of friends, especially from the church. We need a Paul, a Barnabas, and a Timothy. All right? Now, you say, well, what does that mean? Well, let's talk about it. Paul is the older person who's willing to invest in your life. I have back home, there's a guy who used to be an elder. He's an older gentleman. He's in his 80s. I love that guy. I love sitting and talking to him. I love spending time with him because he's invested in my life. And he has wisdom that he passes down. There are moments that I need to hear his sort of calming voice, and then I need to gain some of the experience and the wisdom that he's gained from that experience in my own life. There have been situations where something's happened and I'm burning hot about it, I'm angry, and he's telling me, hey, just give it a second. Just let it play out. Be patient. Don't make a mistake because you're mad, and he'll tell me those kinds of things. We all need someone like that who has experience that we don't have. Now, it doesn't mean you have to go out and find an 85-year-old person. Although, I would suggest to you, you should. Find someone who's been a Christian for a long time, and who's been through some stuff, right? And I guarantee you, if they're the kind of Christian that they ought to be, they'll want to tell you the things that you need to hear. They'll want to share those stories with you and give you that wisdom. We all need that. We all have to recognize that no matter how old you are, we've lived a finite amount of time. There are people who've lived longer than us. They've experienced more things than we have. Man, what a great resource, right? Aren't you glad you can get on your phone and there's a Google map if you're going somewhere? Like I can type in, okay, here, gives me the directions how I get there. Well, how did all of that information get on your phone? Because at some point, somebody took the time to take the journey and map it out. Right? We're all depending on someone else's work when we do that. They've already gone and they've said, okay, you need to go this way and that way, and this is the best way. And they made roads and they did all that work, and we depend on that. Well, Christianity is much the same way. I'm trying to get to heaven. Why wouldn't I want to talk to someone who's a little farther down the road? Who tells me, hey, you got to look out for this. Hey, it's really faster if you go this way. Hey, this is better. That'll help me. I need a Paul. I also need a Barnabas. That is a brother or sister who loves you, who is there to encourage you, who's your age, who will go with you. We tend to change for the better when we have a Barnabas in our lives, when we have a companion. One of the great things about being married is that you have that companion. I mean, that's ideally the way it was supposed to be. But there's also a need for a companion that can fulfill some of those things that maybe a spouse can't. I love my wife. She provides all kinds of spiritual and emotional help for me in life. She doesn't understand what it's like to be a man. She doesn't understand some of the things that men deal with and the emotions that we deal with, the situations we go through, how the perspective by which we see those things. So sometimes it's good to have a friend that's there who's walking beside you, who's parallel, that you can bounce ideas off of, that understands where you're at. Who can say, yeah, I'm feeling the same thing, or I saw the same thing, or man, you know, I really wanted to try this when I saw it, and we should do it together. You need a Barnabas like that. You need someone who's there, who understands, who's walking with you, who's going to strengthen you and encourage you along the way. And then, I would suggest to you, you need a Timothy. Now, we'll see who's got their thinking caps on. If the Paul's the older guy, the Barnabas is your age, Timothy's younger. You're going to say, well, wait a second. And I'm looking at you, and y'all are all very young compared to me. And you're saying, yes, we know that. You're a very old man. And you're like, we can't get much younger. Yeah, you can. There are young people who look up to you. There are young people who watch you. They're patterning their lives after you, whether you realize it or not. And one of the things about teaching is you have to know the material. If I'm going to teach something to someone, I've got to know what I'm talking about, right? You're going to want to know, hey, you've looked this up, you've studied it, you have some experience with it, you're familiar with this topic. There are things I could get up here and you'd say, okay, I want you to talk about this. I'm lost, I've got nothing, right? You're like, I want you to talk about Fortnite. I don't know. I think it's a video game, maybe on a phone, I don't know. I couldn't fill an hour with that. We have to know the material to be able to teach it to somebody. If you have someone that you're helping, it strengthens you. If you have someone that you're watching, you also see some of the mistakes that you've made, and your wisdom is being applied to their lives, and you're encouraging them, and you're a source of strength to them, and it makes you want to be a better person. It makes you want to know the material more. So it's important to have a Timothy. Find someone, a little brother, a little sister, someone in the congregation, and make an impact in their lives. You'd be amazed just by doing that how much that's going to motivate you to be the kind of Christian that God wants you to be. All right, so that's the first thing. You need to have Paul, you need to have Barnabas, you need to have Timothy. I want you to also ask yourself the question, who has my back? Now, when we talk about that, I mean, we recognize, we may say, who has your six or something like that. It's like a military term. And the idea being, hey, when things get sort of hairy, when they're getting sketchy, who's watching my back? Who's looking in the places that I can't look? Who's looking out for me to protect me? And the idea being that you're also protecting them. We need people like that who have our back. 1 Samuel chapter 20 is a relationship between David and Saul's son Jonathan. It's a celebrated relationship. It's a friendship that's strong. And in verse 23, he says, as for the matter which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever. What Jonathan is telling him there in that moment is, David, I know it's my dad. I know he's trying to kill you, but I have your back. He warned him he was in danger. He's going to let him know what kind of danger. He's I've got your back, and I will always have your back. You need someone like that in your life. You need someone like Jonathan who is going to be there to save you, to warn you, to watch out for you. You need someone to tell you when the enemy is getting close, to say, I've got your back. The next thing I want us to do is, let's turn to Luke chapter 10. Because I think there's another big principle in here, something that's really important we have to recognize. All right, Luke chapter 10, beginning of verse 1. It says, after this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them on ahead of him, two by two, into every town and place where he himself was about to go. And he said to them, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into this harvest. Go your way. Behold, I'm sending you out as lambs in the midst of wolves. Carry no money bag, no knapsack, no sandals. Greet no one on the road. All right, so we recognize Jesus sending people out, right? He tells them, what kind of environment is this going to be? Is this a friendly environment? He said, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. You're the prey, and you're surrounded by predators. It's going to be hard. It's going to be dangerous. It's probably going to be discouraging and heartbreaking. And then he tells them, don't take a money bag. Don't take money with you. Don't take a place to lie your head or sandals that are extra that, you know, that you can have in case something happens to your other one. Don't go out and try to make associations along the way and building up those sort of associations. So you don't need any of those things. Now, imagine I'm sending you into a dangerous area. And I'm telling you, hey, it's dangerous. There are things that are going to get you. But I don't want you to take any protection. I don't want you to take any backup plans. I don't want you to take anything that you can depend on where you might say, okay, it may be dangerous, but I've got this gun, I've got a shield, I've got something, I've got something, some tool that's going to help me, right? Now ask yourself the question, looking at the text, did Jesus really send them out there with nothing? No. What's the one thing he gave them? Don't take money. There you go. Don't take money. Don't take provisions. What you need is a friend. You need someone to go with you. Because money will let you down. Money is nice. It's good. Everyone enjoys it. Some people have more, some people have less, but I guarantee you this, at some point, there's going to come a time in your life where you don't have enough money to solve your problem. Okay? I don't think any of you are that rich, to be honest with you. And there's going to come at some point where money is just not going to solve, no matter how much you have, it's not going to solve your problem. Or you might take provisions, you might make all these plans, I'm going to get all this stuff, and then something's going to happen, you're not going to be able to take care of it because you didn't provide enough. In those moments, what you need is a friend. You need someone who is beside you, who's watching your back. That's what's most important. And in those moments of my life where I didn't have enough money and I didn't have enough stuff, my friends helped get me through it. Jesus understood that. He sends them out. Don't take that other stuff. Take what's most important. Take a friend. Now, sounds pretty familiar with what we're doing, right? This is great. I love Focal Point. We get to spend like 4 days here, and there's all these lessons, and I'm shaking hands with preachers and friends and guys I went to preaching school with, you know, all that. I mean, it's just great. But at some point, it wraps up, right? We got to go back home. We got to go back into the world. And the world is not as friendly. The world doesn't care what your faith looks like. And in fact, it wants to take your faith from you. So what I need is I go out into that dangerous place. I need friends. I need the people who've got my back. So, I think we all recognize what's going on here. Next question is going to be, how do I get one? How do I find one of those people? I mean, it sounds good, right? Someone who's there to encourage you, who knows you, who's a companion to you, who gives you wisdom, who inspires you. I mean, that sounds good. How'd I get one? Where do I go? What am I looking for? What do I do? Well, I'm going to suggest you the first principle is this. You've got to be one first as well. So one of the great questions that preachers always ask, and we always figure out a way to throw it into a sermon somewhere. I know you two have probably done it. You ask the question, if the rest of the church was a Christian like you are a Christian, what kind of church would we have? One of the books I read, I've got a daughter, I've got two of them, a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old. One of the questions was, or one of the statements it made was, be the kind of man you want your daughter to marry. Man, that's pretty sobering when you think about it, right? If I was the The model for Christianity, what would Christianity look like? If I was the model for being a husband, what would that husband look like? So, the same thing is true for friends. If I want one of those friends, someone who is all the qualities that we're going to talk about here in just a second, if I want all of that, then I've got to be that same thing, right? So again, I'm going to kind of sneak back into yesterday. There was a moment, years and years and years ago, I had a young man. He was probably about y'all's age, bigger kids in the back there. He had met a young girl. Thought she was pretty. She was a very faithful young lady. He was a good kid, but he didn't always make the best choices. But he told me one day, man, I think she's really pretty. I think she's funny. I like talking to her. I want to ask her out. And my question to him was, why do you think she would want to go out with you? If her desire is to be a Christian and to be faithful, and that's one of the things he really liked about her, why would she go out with you? The idea being, be that kind of person that she would be attracted to. The things that are important to her. I mean, if you're a serious Christian, if you're someone who's you take your faith serious and you want to be faithful, why would you surround yourself with someone who doesn't share that interest? Why would they then be your friend if you didn't have that interest? So you've got to be one first. You've got to be that kind of friend first. So maybe before we say, where do I start, we ought to ask ourselves, am I that kind of friend? So, with that in mind, we'll just answer that, and we're going to say right now, yes, you're all that kind of person. You've worked on your life, you've built your faith, you say, okay, I think I have something to offer, I can be that kind of friend. Where do I start? First thing I would tell you is, have you ever prayed about it? We pray for other things that we want, don't we? For other things that we need? I would guarantee you that probably all of us in here have prayed at some point for something that was, let's say, superfluous. It wasn't all that important. Or you prayed to get out of trouble or something that was some selfish thing. If you're telling me you haven't, I'm going to call you a liar. Because we've all done it, right? But when was the last time you prayed for a good friend? For that kind of relationship, to share your life and to share everything with someone like that. When was the last time you spent time in prayer with God about it? You know, one of the great things about prayer is not only that God is listening, but we also listen, right? And if I spend enough time in prayer, praying about finding a good friend and being a good friend, then when I'm not praying, it's also going to be on my mind. Right? I'll be thinking about it still. If it's something I'm constantly bringing up, hey, it'll just kind of be there normally. Y'all ever had that situation where you hear a song on the radio and it's like they play it all the time? Maybe it's the new, like some new song that everyone likes. And after a while, you find yourself, you're like, man, that's all I'm doing is humming that song in my head, you know, or something like that. That's kind of the way this works as well. When we think about things, when we pray about things, it kind of ingrains itself in us where it becomes almost second nature to us, where it's something that's right there on the forefront and we're ready to be able to take advantage of it when the opportunity comes. So, first step, pray about it. Second one is start looking. Observe. Examine your life. You're going to have to take a hard look at the people in your life. Is so-and-so the kind of person we're going to talk about? Yes or no? And be honest. Look at it with, like, and I'm almost going to say a scientific mind. Don't say, I hope they're this kind of person. Boy, I sure would like it if they were. Are they that kind of person? Be honest about it. That doesn't mean they can't become that. It doesn't mean that relationship can't develop, but you need to understand where they are. Don't fool yourself. Don't try to make it into something that it's not. Again, the Lord blessed the church with wonderful people in it. You can find a Paul, a Barnabas, and a Timothy. Okay? And then the next one I'm going to tell you is, go for it. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? At some point, you're going to have to pick up the phone. At some point, you're going to have to reach out. At some point, invite them to Bible class. Invite them to the house. Start a Bible study with them. Hey, man, I was wanting to look at this. Would you sit down and study with me? At some point, you're just going to have to ask. You're just going to have to be bold enough to say, listen, this is what I want. All right. So, after you've picked up the phone, after you've talked to them, after you've started observing them, the question is going to be, what am I looking for? So we've done all this, laid all this time. What am I looking for? I'm going to give you, some of you are writing, it's great, love notes. We're going to give you a list here. Everybody likes a list. It's easy, it's nice, okay. You ready? Before you write, start on your list. Again, let me put this one thing out there. Not everyone is going to fit this need. Proverbs 18:24 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Not every relationship that you're going to have in life is going to be this kind of friend. Okay? That's just something we have to accept. These things are valuable, and they're valuable because they're rare. Okay? So, in this particular sense, quality is going to trump quantity. It doesn't matter how many friends you have, it matters what kind of friends you have. And so we have to have some sort of criteria to examine and see who those friends are. So, okay, here we go. Here's number one. Is this person near me? I mean, are they accessible? Do they live in proximity to me? Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 10. Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend. Do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor, and that Hebrew word there also means friend, who is near than a brother who is far away. All right, I'm going to break some hearts here. Long-distance relationships are hard, aren't they? Y'all ever seen that? Maybe you've experienced that. You meet that dude at camp or that young lady at camp, and you get on. I mean, it's just great for two, 3, 4 days or whatever. And then they go back to Arkansas or Oklahoma or wherever, and you go somewhere. And then maybe you talk on the phone a little bit, but then you get busy. And what happens? You begin to drift away, right? It's hard. Now, it doesn't mean it's impossible. It's been done. You might go, well, I know someone and they did it and it's fine. And we can do it. I get that, okay? It's been done. But I guarantee you, for every one of those you can show me, I can show you 100 that didn't. Right? Okay. So that's important. Do I encounter this person often? Is this someone I'm going to be bumping into, that I'm going to be around, that I have easy access to them? There's an old proverb, grass grows over an unused path, right? Same thing. When you don't have that closeness, you tend to drift away and the relationship tends to fall apart. So that's number one. How close are they? Number two, can they respect boundaries? Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 17. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. Alright, so boundaries are important. In every relationship, boundaries are important. I have friends. There are certain things I can talk about with them. Certain things I know. Man, that's really a rough subject for them. Okay? There are certain things that when they're angry, they don't want to hear. They don't need to hear. It's just going to make it worse. Now, that being said, what I'm not talking about is, you know, there are certain things that we're never going to talk about, no matter what happens. We'll never talk about them, even if it's to your detriment. What I'm saying is, they have to know you enough to know when to back off. Right?
Question. Sure. Can that also include, like, parents' boundaries? Like, if your parents say, don't talk about this, you don't do this, and then your friends, like,
yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sure. Yeah, any boundaries they need to know, hey, there are lines that don't need to be crossed. And I respect that. You know, I respect it. Can't talk about this. Or, you know, this thing is off limits. Or in this moment, this isn't what you need to hear. I can recognize it. I need to back away for a second. I need to give you some room to breathe. We need to have people who can recognize that. Do they recognize boundaries when they're important? Now, that being said, if someone goes, I have a secret, I'm going to kill myself tomorrow. That's not a healthy boundary, right? We're going to talk about that. No matter how much you don't want to talk about it, we're going to talk about it. I'm going to tell somebody because you're going to hurt yourself and I'm afraid you are, and that's important. And those are not the kind of boundaries we're talking about. We're talking about those healthy boundaries. We're just in that moment you recognize, hey, I got to back away for a second. I got to give them a chance to breathe. Or, hey, I don't want to push them and put them in a situation where it's going to be harder for them. It's going to make life more difficult. They got to be able to recognize what boundaries need to be respected. Okay? Next one. Do their priorities match yours? Again, we all have different interests, and I would guarantee you that most of your friends you have at least one shared interest with, right? Probably multiple shared interests. Whether it's movies or video games or books or television shows or sports or whatever. And all of those are really great interests. But this is the kind of friend that didn't have the priorities in the wrong. Is their number one priority serving God? When I'm trying to talk about God, when I'm trying to build my faith, are they still wanting to talk about the Dallas Cowboys? You know? Are they still wanting to deal with, and is that the more important thing to them? If so, then they can't be that kind of friend. I need a kind of friend who their number one priority is just like mine. They want to get to heaven. They want to be stronger in their walk with God. Alright, so make sure their priorities match you. This kind of gets to what we were talking about. What is this, four? Can they keep a secret? And again, we're not talking about a secret where this is going to hurt me. You know, or like I'm going to hurt myself or whatever, and I don't tell anybody I stole something. No, that's not the kind of secret we're talking about. What I'm talking about here is not, you know, snitches get stitches. It's, I'm fixing to tell you something that I wouldn't tell anyone else. Can you keep it between us? Can I trust you? Can I confide in you? And can I open up to you in a way that I know that you're going to honor that? You're going to respect that and you're going to cherish it. I can trust you. I'm struggling with this. The other day, these thoughts kept popping into my mind. I want to talk to you about it. Okay? Can they keep a secret? Can they make sure, or can they be the kind of person that you're going to tell them the pretty big things, the pretty important things in your life, and they're going to keep it between you guys? Proverbs chapter 25, verses 9 and 10. Argue your case with your neighbor himself. Do not reveal another secret, lest he hears you and bring shame upon you. Your ill repute and your ill repute have no end. One of the quickest ways to kill a friendship is to take a secret that was meant to be sacred, that was meant to be special, that was shared in confidence and broadcast it. You put their business in the street, they're going to know, I can't come to you anymore. I can't talk to you about this thing when I'm really hurting or when I'm really scared or when I'm really unsure or when I'm about to make a mistake and I feel the pressure and the temptation. I can't come to you because you're going to go tell it to everybody. So can they keep a secret? The next one, do they love you enough to call you out? Now, Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6. Better is an open rebuke than a hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. A real friend is going to call you out when you need it. A real friend is going to look at you and go, hey, what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing. Those words that you're using, you shouldn't be using them. Those things that you're watching, you shouldn't be watching it. That anger that you're holding on to, you shouldn't be angry. You need to let that go. And they're going to do it not because they want to be superior or not because they like picking on you or whatever. It's because they're trying to help you. I mean, if you were about to walk into a ditch, would you want someone to yell and go, hey, there's a ditch right in front of you. Don't fall in, right? If you did and your friend was standing there watching, you'd go, what in the world, man? You saw the whole thing and you just let me fall in the hole? Right? You go, that's not being very much of a friend. The same thing with spiritual stuff. When they see you going down a path that you don't need to go down, they need to be able to say, hey, you need to stop. You need to be careful. You need to watch out. You need to make sure that you're going the right way. So you need someone who's going to call you out. Okay, two more. Are they forgiving? Proverbs 17 and verse 9. Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. True friendship is too valuable, too precious to throw away just because one of you made a mistake. Right? And if they keep bringing it up and they're using it as a weapon against you to get you to do what they want you to do or in a negative sense, they don't really love you. They're not that kind of friend. A true friend, the kind of friend we're talking about, when we're being a knucklehead, goes, you know what, you're being a knucklehead, but I still love you. And I'm still here for you. And I'm going to help you get through this. And even if it's something that you've done to me, I know the rest of the time you've said and you've shown me that you've loved me. And so I recognize that's the kind of relationship we have, even when you make a mistake, even when you're mean to me, even, you know? Now, make sure it's an occasional mistake. Something that's constantly happening, you got to reevaluate that. But you spend enough time with someone, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to say something you're not supposed to say in anger. You're going to cross a boundary that you're not supposed to. That's just a part of living and being humans and not being perfect. We're going to make mistakes. You need someone to go, okay, I understand it was a mistake. We'll work through this. We'll get past this. It's all right. And it's going to be in the past. I'm not going to bring it back up. That's not what friends do. All right, so are they forgiving? And the last one, are they constant? Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. One of the moments that makes me laugh in like a movie or something is when you got somebody and they, you know, like they're facing the enemy and they go, he's got all his friends and go, all right, guys, let's get them. And he turns around and all the friends are gone, right? You know, it happens in a bunch of movies. That happens in real life too. Things get tough. It gets hard to be a friend. They back away. In the time that you need them most, in the time that they should be there for you, they're starting to distance themselves. Sometimes it's really easy to be a friend. Things are going good. Everything's going great. That's really easy. What you want is the one that when it's not great, when it's hard to be your friend, they're still your friend. And it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, if it's up or down, they're still your friend in the same way, the same quality, the same tenor that they've always been. Are they consistent? Yes, ma'am. Sure.
And she, since she was little, she lost her eyesight. And she was blind when she was 14. So beginning through a little teen.
Right.
When she was blind, all her friends left her that she thought was her friend.
Right.
And now that she's an adult, she relied on a lot of other people to help her around and stuff like that. So those are her real friends.
Sure. Sure. And using another example, we go to the Bible, the story of the prodigal son. He had friends, right? But as soon as the money ran out, as soon as it was hard to be his friend, what did they do? They were gone. Who was his real friend? It was his family. It was his father. The people who loved him, even though he made mistakes, even though they took him back. It didn't matter. They were still there for him. That's the kind of people we need. We need people whose friendship doesn't waver when it gets tough. All right, so before Trent comes in here, there he is. I'm out of time. We're fixing to stop recording. This is it. Thanks, guys. Friendships is a giving and receiving relationship. Remember that. If you want to have this kind of friend, you need to be this kind of friend. But I will tell you this, there's affection and commitment and loyalty and love in these kinds of relationships, and they're worth the effort. They're worth finding those people. They're worth being those kinds of friends. And so I would encourage you to ask yourself the question, who sharpens you? You don't just want friends who are going to not get in your way as you get to heaven. You want friends that are going to propel you forward.